Welcome to the Bank Marketing Show, the podcast that engages and informs you for success in today's marketplace. It's the show that will make you a better marketer with trends, tactics, and inspiration from experts and industry leaders. If you're wanting to impact your personal success and position your bank as the best choice in your market, you're in the right place. Now let's dive into today's show with your hosts, Chris and Dan.
Hello, welcome everyone to another episode of the Bank Marketing Show. We're excited about what we've got in store for you today. A really outstanding guest that is going to bring a lot of great information and I think resource to you regardless of your bank or your business. So hang on for that and I'll toss it over to my co-host, Dan. How are you, Dan?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Great.
Good. Well, today we have a great guest. Welcome, Allison McCutcheon, to the show.
Thanks.
Allison is Chief People and Strategy Officer at Largely, a really cool video platform for HR and talent teams and kind of trying to change the way companies and banks do hiring and finding great talent. So excited to have her today. She's how long have you been at Largely now? It's relatively
just a hair great. Over a year.
Yep. Over a year. And prior to that, you've spent lots of years in HR leadership. You ran talent acquisition at Anheuser-Busch. I'm also excited to have a fellow St. Louisan on this podcast. I think this is the first time that's happened.
Yep.
So welcome to the show.
Wonderful to be here. Thanks, Dan. Thanks, Chris.
Glad to have you, Allison.
So let's start with, you've been doing the recruiting talent acquisition stuff a long time. And I know you've worked with banks, we work with banks, like a lot has changed. A lot has changed in hiring and there's been kind of staffing, I don't know if it's staffing crises, but there's been a lot of it's been a lot harder for banks to hire in the past couple of years. So let's start a little there and talk a little about how hiring has kind of changed in the last couple of years and, where we're at now kind of a year or two post-pandemic.
Yeah. So I think it's different on which side you're on, right? So if you're on the candidate side or if you're on the banking or the hiring manager side, it's changed for both parties. And that's a really important difference. So I think for all of us who have roles that we need to fill, kind of what we've experienced is kind of this feast or famine. So, there are times and it's all cyclical and we know that that's how the world works, but we'll have these peaks and valleys. And obviously the pandemic has affected every aspect of everyone's life. And certainly it affected a variety of different industries, different ways on the hiring front as well, right? We've all seen help wanted signs up at various, quick serve restaurants and that type of thing. So I can imagine that for, positions within the banks, the tellers, et cetera, those more customer-focused roles, that those have been incredibly difficult. Whereas, a couple of years ago, you had a lot more people coming in the door with interest.
You were saying something before we hit record here about, the number of people looking for work versus the number of roles that are out there. Talk a little about, I love that stat you mentioned, but I'll let you have the glory of it. But talk a little about that and what that means for a bank, like going out and looking for people.
Well, I think it's really interesting, right? Because we all, hear in the news that there are all sorts of layoffs going on and big layoffs in tech. And then it creates kind of this emotion and this feeling of worry for everyone. But when you really look across our country, over half of the roles, that exist are hourly jobs. So they're everything from, a dishwasher to someone in hospitality, to a warehouse worker. Those types of roles are incredibly prevalent and there are a ton of them open. I think we have something like either 1.6, 1.8 people available per job. So if you do the math on that, there are a lot of open roles, not enough people for those roles, which means competition is really, really tight. And then what we're seeing also from a generational standpoint is the expectations of the employee are very different than they've been before, right? We all want to do something with meaning and purpose. And that's not new, but certainly I was speaking with a friend earlier today and she said this, and I thought it was just brilliant that, you know, the generations that are now seeking employment have learned from those of us that have come before and now have a different view of what they're willing to accept and what they're not willing to accept. And that sense of purpose is so critical for people joining the workforce. And it's been really, really impactful on you know, hiring and being able to bring talent in the door.
Well, so Allison, how does that begin to translate then for a company or a bank? And what start to kind of put some meat on the bone about how do they attract? You know, it's not just throwing a job out there on LinkedIn and waiting for, you know, people to kick in the door and this having to choose from nothing but talented applicants. That's not the case. So what does that look like? And kind of take us into that world a little bit.
Absolutely. So in my previous role, when I was leading talent for AB for North America, we took the recruitment team through a bit of a transition. So what you just described, Chris, is the post and pray approach. You post the job and you pray that the right candidate is out there and they happen to see your job, they apply, they go through your process, and then they accept the offer, and then they start. And then, of course, they stay forever, right? As long as they're performing. And that is a wonderful, wonderful dream. And I think some people have had success with that throughout their career. I mean, I certainly have. Back when I started a very, very long time ago, that was what you did. But now we really have to transition and focus on sourcing and selling. So going out there, I had a VP once who said to me, "Well, how do I know, Allison, that this is really the best of the best, this slate of candidates that you're presenting to me?" And I thought about it and I thought, well, because these candidates are amazing, we've put them through our process and we know, but he had a really solid point. We didn't go out to find the best of the best. Those were the best of the best of the candidates who had applied already. So I think that there is, you know, a different kind of, there's a shift. And then depending for a bank on how they're staffed, you know, if you're really small, perhaps you don't have a recruiter on site on staff, right? And so you've got an HR professional who is wearing multiple hats and they're doing it. Or maybe you've got a member of your leadership team that's doing the recruitment. And so when you start researching, you see all sorts of things like employer brand and talent marketing and culture and, you know, what awards do we have that we can put out there? And it can get really, really overwhelming. But what's really, really important is thinking about your organization and what is your reputation in the marketplace. When someone says your name, do they think, "I can't stand those people. They're rude to me every time I come in," or, "Oh, I heard about Sally's time when she was working over there with Jim and said Jim was really not a delight." You know, these things happen. These stories get told, especially in smaller communities. And so really your reputation and your culture is really, really critical. So what I encourage people to do to start is think about your networks. Think about the people that you know. The people you know other people. And so how can you start talking about the opportunities within your organization with folks you know and trust and getting them to kind of get the message out, get the word out as well, and then begin your process from there, in addition to the posting, right? And posting on the right types of sites, whether it's, you know, the big ones, the LinkedIns and the Indeeds of the world, or, you know, maybe there's, you know, different banking boards that are more appropriate for your region or area.
Yeah, and I think with banking jobs, you know, too, it's like you're not, banks have a similar set of jobs to other banks, right? If you're looking for a bank job, you generally know probably what a teller is, mm-hmm. right? So the differentiator in those postings, like, is not the 10 bullets of job description. Like, that's the part people are probably skimming through, right? It's all that branding stuff at the beginning. It's what they see when they go to your website. It's what they see when they, you know, somebody talks about them.
Well, and more often than not, they're not actually reading the job description. So if you're talking about an entry-level role, most likely they're spending 5 to 10 seconds looking at some general bullets and what's important to them, which is usually pay and benefits. You know, this is not volunteer work. This is actual work, and people are really interested in what that exchange is going to be for them. So being really, really honest in your job description is important. I think you make an amazing point. A teller is a teller is a teller for the most part, right? With a couple of different shifts. So how can you think of that job description as a way to advertise the role and entice someone versus the legal document, which you absolutely need to have? But you can have a job description that your HR team uses, and then you can have an advertisement that might have a little bit more enticing language to attract a talented candidate. I think it's also important, though, to think about the jobs that you have within your organization, because there are varying levels and degrees. So there are entry-level roles, there are senior roles, and you really need to unpack. For the longest time, we have used degree, we have used, you know, years of experience as these differentiators on whether someone was qualified for a job or not. But it's really time to get creative and think about, okay, do I really need someone with 3 years of experience here? Or will 1 year work? Or can I bring someone in that has transferable skills? Transferable skills are absolutely critical for any organization. It's the way that we need to be thinking now, because a lot of people are looking to do different things. They're looking to grow. They're looking to kind of expand and find meaning. And purpose within their work. And I mean, I can tell the community bank story, you know, all day long. The impact that community banks have is just, it's really, really important, you know, to the economic viability of a region. And I can't think of anything more purposeful than helping to build a community. And think about, you know, you've got maybe you're you know, small business loans, you're part of that community, you're watching people that you know, or people, you know, relatives, what have you, succeed and help build that community. I mean, talk about purpose, right? So those are really important stories to tell. But, you know, think about getting creative with the people that you're willing to hire and their skill sets and their abilities.
Allison, you mentioned culture. Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, a comment. One of the best hires that I have ever made in all of my years as a business owner and entrepreneur, and that's stacking up, it's a lot of years, was someone who had never worked specifically in the industry in which I hired this person for, but had the right composition and transferable skills that you mentioned, and was just phenomenal. You know, so it's like, I can teach you the minutia of the job skill sets that you need to know. And in our world, you know, yes, we can teach you more about compliance. We can teach you, right, you know, all of those things, not necessarily only hiring from others that have a banking background all the time. So I think you make some great points there.
I used to make enemies of other HR professionals because I would never encourage anyone to get a degree in HR. I always encouraged them to go for general business or finance, because if you can understand how the business operates, you're in a better position with which to advise and support and, you know, help with that aspect of the business. I'm a big believer in that.
I love that. Yeah. And you also mentioned culture, and I wanted to get you to go there deeper and further, because I like the picture that you painted, because if it's an attractive business group of people, you know, then that's one thing, as opposed to, oh yeah, no, Bob works over there and either he's a drip or, you know, mm-hmm. his boss is a mean lady or whatever the case may be. So, you know, what is that around the culture, and how much does it matter, and how do we put it out there? How do we tell that story?
So I think culture matters more than really anything else, right? And it's your reputation, it's your standards of behavior that you accept within your organization. It's how people can expect to be treated. It's how people can expect to know what's going to happen. And as human beings, we all want to know that. I mean, there are many spontaneous among us, but for the most part, especially from a work perspective, and I'm going to, in finance and in banking, I feel like this personality type does exist, that you really like to know what's going to happen and what to expect. I think what sometimes we forget when we talk about hiring and when we talk about recruitment and just business in general is at the end of the day, we are all human beings and we all want to be treated with dignity and respect. And we all want to have a positive work environment. No one ever goes, even the nastiest people don't really want to work in a nasty environment. They just don't, right? They're dealing with something else that's causing that behavior. So I think that the best way to really think about your culture is really look around and evaluate what are the things that we do? What are the stories that we have to tell? You know, do we have Tina, who's been with us for 30 years and has been able, you know, to do XYZ, which she's always wanted to do? Let's tell Tina's story. Do we have someone maybe without a banking background at all? We looked at someone with transferable skills and they've been successful with our organization. Tell those stories, because most people have lost a lot of faith in institutions. And so having an institution on their website or in their job ad talk about how great they are, that's what everyone is expecting. No one's expecting, you know, to get a balanced review on your website. So you really do need to pull out those personable emotional moments that will allow people to connect and really understand what your culture is. And if you don't know, you should ask the people who make it. And that's you and your employees. Because sometimes you think you have one culture, but you really have another. And the worst thing that can happen is you or your recruitment team is talking about this culture. And then 3 months down the road, the people that they've hired are out the door because they experienced a different one. And then you've lost a lot of time and a lot of money, and you've got to start it all over again. So it's incredibly wasteful.
When I think too, on that point, the flip side is also interesting of like, if you hire somebody that doesn't fit the culture, right? If that person, you know, that person doesn't turn out, that's, you know, can be a huge detriment. You've been talking about getting culture, kind of pushing your culture out in a sense, right? Like making sure applicants and the community know about it. But, you know, what about the opposite of, you know, making sure that somebody's a fit for your bank's culture?
I think cultural fit is really, really interesting, because I think you've got to be really transparent. And I think that sometimes what happens in the hiring process is we forget that both parties get to make decisions. So it's important to, like, you can think about it kind of like dating, right? You got to show your true colors. You got to go through that interview process. You got to tell them who you are. And then they get to decide whether they want to continue. And same for you. So hiring teams get to decide if they want to continue to interview or potentially extend an offer to someone. But that individual is making an evaluation as well. And so I think, you know, being incredibly transparent, and then also really recognizing and understanding what your culture is, and then talking about it. Don't make any assumptions. You know, I'm a strong believer in going through, and I've used a ton of different assessments in my past, and I think that they have a place. But that also depends on your organization, the size of your organization, and how valuable a role that they can actually play. But I think you make a valid point. You've got to be honest about who you are, and then you've got to really try. That's what an interview is you're trying to get information from the other person. So you can make that determination. There's no magic bullet there, right? Unfit. There really isn't.
Yeah. So you're not only filtering by their Enneagram number and all the other ones get tossed in the trash can?
I mean,
it's not the only determining factor.
It's so strange. So strange. Used to be.
Yeah.
You've got 3 years experience and that's what the job rec says. So you're hired.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and Allison, you know, those of us that have hired over the years, we also know how painful it is too when you have to really go through the entire process. And, you know, we always hear, you know, hire slow, fire quick, you know, or some variation of that. And, you know, it is when it's, gosh, I've got to get somebody in this role. We're drowning, you know, and it's so tempting to make the first hire that's okay. You know, they're okay. They'll be okay. And, you know, am I willing to accept and are our listeners today, our banks willing to accept an okay fit, you know, or do they hold out for the right one? Maybe it's the first one that they interview, but maybe it's well down the road. So, and I know a lot of your processes that you guys have worked on over the years help to kind of peel back that onion.
Yeah, I encourage anyone listening who has any authority in the hiring process to go secret shop their own process. Go apply for a job at your own organization so you can see what that experience looks like. I agree that it's very important to be thoughtful and mindful about who you're going to hire, assessing for fit, making a determination, and making a decision. But in today's competitive environment, unless we're talking about a very senior role where there's some expectation for a little bit more kind of vetting, if you will, speed is a key competitive advantage in the recruitment process because the candidates have so many options. And so really understanding your market is important. Because that's the other thing is we can't paint a broad brush for everyone who's listening, right? Everyone's in a different region. They're in a different market. The hiring landscape might look a little bit different. And so my famous HR answer after doing this for 20 years is it depends, right? It's the same thing your attorney always tells you. It depends. Because it depends on a variety of factors and what your particular situation is. But I agree. I think that every time that I've made a quick hire and tried to press the easy button, it bit me. And I think that understanding that the impact of that new hire is not just on you and is not just on the work getting accomplished, but it's going to be, that person is going to have an impact on all of their coworkers and the broader organization and culture, right? Everyone you bring is going to add to the culture because the culture is not the awards you've won. The culture is the people and how they behave and how they act and how they treat one another. And their guiding, you know, values and how you make decisions. All of that comes together.
It's interesting. Just thinking about like, you know, if you're a top, you know, if you're a top candidate, right, you probably know you're a top candidate. You probably know you're in a good place for the roles you're applying to. You're not just applying to one, you know, universal banker role or one teller role. You're applying to like all of them in your area, right? Or the, you know, you're doing some kind of vetting on your own, but like...
Or someone's telling you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know. But if your process is not up to par, whatever that process looks like, it's, you know, that candidate's going to see that because they're, you know, they're seeing the processes of other institutions at the same time.
For sure. And it does two things, right? Like one, it can reflect on, you know, the recruitment team and how maybe overloaded they are or under-resourced. But it reflects on how you treat people, which is an extension of your culture. How you treat your candidates tells them how they can expect to be treated as an employee. And if we are one of the things at Largely that we try to do is help bring that human connection and that human experience back to what has turned into a very highly automated, you know, recruitment landscape. The name of the game for so long has been on the recruitment side has been efficiency, technology. Let me automate everything, which is fantastic. I'm a huge fan of it. But that has to come with the human interaction and connection and the ability to respect the person on the other side and their time.
Yeah, I get, I don't know, at least a couple a week LinkedIn messages that are something to the effect of, we help people realize their dream of franchise ownership. I'm like, okay. Have you ever dreamt of owning your own business? I'm like, I do. Like, you're not looking at my profile. This is automated. And it comes through, and there's, you know, that's a specific example for the way my LinkedIn profile is set up. But, you know, if you're in banking, like the same thing happens, and you can clearly, it's everything's so automated. You can clearly tell when it is, but the flip side is you can clearly tell when it isn't, when somebody's actually paying attention.
And you can be honest about it, right?
Good way for, yeah.
Just be honest about it. Here's what's going to happen. That's what I tell every single one of our clients. Tell people exactly what they can expect from your process. Say to them, thank you so much for applying. We understand that you took time to complete the application, submit your resume, you found us, you did some research. We really appreciate that. We will respond to you within 72 hours of your application. You will hear from us. Or conversely, we look at I have a client who does this, and I think it's just beautiful. They say, we look at every single application that comes in the door. Because of that, you probably won't hear from us in, you know, for a week. And I think that, you know, as humans, we all just want to know, just tell me what to expect so I can understand. And so when people do that, I think it has just a tremendous effect on whether, you know, they're wanting to stay in that process with you or not. Because a lot of people self-select out based on how they're treated in their recruitment process.
I think that stuff is so important. Allison, are there any other kind of key mistakes that banks and other companies that are trying to recruit and hire that you see them make on a repeated basis?
Oh, yes. I'm trying to think of my biggest pet peeve, narrow it down a little bit. I think it's the lack of visibility and the lack of communication. That is the biggest pain point. And it's the biggest pain point for the candidate. And it's also a huge pain point for a recruiter or a hiring person, right? Because you know you've got to get to something. I mean, think of how we feel when we've got a to-do list, or we know we've got to call someone back, or we need to make a decision. Like there's stress in that. And so I think that communicating clearly, communicating honest expectations can really go a long way, because we all know no one's going to be able to hire 10 recruiters tomorrow, like especially not in this climate. But really focusing on that initial communication and setting expectations, I think, takes care of that.
You flip side of that question, kind of what's the biggest thing that companies hiring, you know, any kind of company, banks especially, obviously, need to remember? I mean, we were talking before we hit record about the secret sauce.
Oh, yes. Kind of leading you there. Transferable skills, right? And so, well, the secret sauce is understanding that we're all humans and we all want to be treated with dignity and respect in every single thing that we do. And if you wouldn't treat your customer that way, you should not treat your candidate or your employee that way. It is so simple. There is no silver bullet for hiring. There is no magic. If you do it this way, it will always result in the perfect hire. It just won't. We're humans. As a variable, we are the craziest. So the one thing that you can do to ensure, you know, the most success is being really, really mindful of, you know, we're all the same, we're all people, and that dignity and respect to your process. And that is your culture.
And I think that can show in every phase of the process. You know, I guess it's kind of one of those old adages of interviewing, for example. It was like, oh, well, Chris came in and out and interviewed with Allison, and gosh, he was so nervous, you know.
Yeah.
Well, excuse me, but no duh. Well, right. Because if I, you know, man, I really want this job. And I, you know, I know this job would probably be a good fit for me. It's also a big step up the ladder. It's whatever, you know, the kind of the whole criteria of what that is. So I think there's really something wrong if Chris is not nervous, you know. So, and I've had, you know, interviewees and candidates come in that just killed it and they left. And I was kind of like, man, I didn't sense any kind of just a natural human, using your terminology, human level of just a high level of desire for this, or just kind of the drive or the even nervousness that, gosh, I really want to get this right. I consider those to be good things. Mm-hmm. You know, show me some passion. Show me some, you know, even if you are, gosh, kind of sweating a little bit and there's kind of, you know, a little bit of angst about it, might not overly so, but wouldn't you agree, it's that humanness in every aspect of the process. And I like what you're saying is even the company showing your humanness.
Yes. We're all people, right? Except for the ATM machine. So, you know, when you think about it, we've got to understand that some people are going to present really nervous and it's going to show. Some people are going to be cool as cucumbers and you might not see any of those nerves, but you know, we all have different ways of demonstrating our emotion and how we're feeling in that moment. But, you know, to your point, it's all about treat people how you want to be treated. I mean, we learned it in kindergarten, hopefully preschool. Hopefully we're still practicing it. That's it.
Well, so you, I mean, talking about humanness and treating people with like, with respect and making connections, you know, you mentioned largely the startup you're working for now. And that's kind of the big focus, right? Is how do you change the recruitment process for that? So talk a little about kind of largely's mission and you know, where that idea came from and what you're working on there.
Sure. No, thanks. So I actually was largely's first customer before I became their chief strategy and people officer. So I was approached by the team, and at the time they were really focused on videos on job descriptions, on really helping companies showcase their culture, tell their story, you know, take the words off the page. We're all on our phones scrolling through Instagram and TikTok, whether we admit it or not. You can spend a lot of time down those tunnels. We're used to consuming content in 30-second or less videos. And so it's time for us to really describe our roles a little bit differently. And so that's how everything got started. And I decided to join the team. They are all brilliant and fantastic. And so I took a huge, huge leap and joined this startup so we could start to really build out a platform that focused on creating connection and helping build transparency for individuals. And it really has evolved a bit. We started on the talent acquisition side solely, thinking about nothing but the recruitment process. So how do you attract people? Grab videos from all different members of your organization to really tell their stories, which highlights your culture, right? Which is magic. And then deploy that content in the right spaces, whether it's on your website. We really encourage organizations to use this content throughout the recruitment process to communicate what people can expect, to also bring other people into the process. You know, you oftentimes don't get an opportunity to interview with your peers or your future peers, but being able to see what that work dynamic is, talk about assessing for fit right there. Person can say, oh, I think Chris is great, but that Dan guy, I don't know. I don't know about him. So, you know, you really, you offer kind of this window beyond what you can find out on the internet. So we think that that's really, really important. And so we've evolved a bit to really an internal communications experience as well. So we had clients who just started using largely in a variety of different ways. They used it for their open enrollment. So instead of, you know, you give 30 different presentations to people about their benefits and what's changing, and half the time the people that are in the room need to, you know, communicate with someone in their family about all of those changes, and they don't remember. They just got the paperwork or the website. And so, you know, it's a way to really, you know, communicate a little bit more broadly out, you know, through all different aspects of the employee journey. And it has been really, really amazing to watch these companies just continue to embed this transparency and connection throughout their organization. And it does something for their culture too, right? It helps to reinforce who they are. And it helps to, you know, just kind of showcase and bring people together from different departments or different regions or different areas too.
Yeah, I'm as you're talking, I was thinking about like all the jobs I've applied for in the past where you just don't know. You just, it's the words on the paper, those bullet points of the job description are the only things you really know. And just having that human touch would help, you know. I'd probably, you know, have applied for more jobs, you know, applied for some more jobs that had a great, you know, charismatic, you know, easy to get along with sounding person versus, you know, and maybe not applied for others that don't, you know, or just not, you kind of sense the cultural fit either being good or bad. And I imagine you get, you know, you get a better talent pool out of it.
Absolutely. Better,
yeah. It's attractive or it's not. It's
right. Yeah.
Especially when, Allison, as you said early on, there are lots of options out there, which are the ones that the better talent is going to be attracted to. And it is that humanness as the secret sauce, as you mentioned. That makes a lot of sense.
Absolutely.
Well, cool. Well, this is, man, we've covered a lot. I know the three of us said before we started recording this session, I mean, this is some stuff that we could visit about all day long, because all of our companies are made up of, guess what? Humans. Mm-hmm. You know, that they are. So maybe we do different things, and maybe our banks are about deposit accounts and loans and, you know, investments and all these other kind of things. But those are carried on by and are about humans. So I love this. And Allison, it's been really, really helpful to spend some time and having some insight into your expertise and broad views about this recruiting process.
Thank you. Appreciate that very much. Yeah, it's been great.
Yeah. And now we get to go to the favorite part, right, Dan?
The lightning round.
The lightning round. That's right.
You know, we've all been, everyone's been waiting to see when we're going to do this, and it's now.
That's right.
It doesn't get more exciting.
I hope Allison's ready.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right. Share a personal best and or a business best.
Okay. Well, my personal best, I have two girls. So I'm a single mom of a 12-year-old and a 15-year-old. So please think of me and send all sorts of good energy my way. But being able to, you know, help model for them what they can do, to not be afraid professionally to, you know, go down different paths and try things, learn, fail, try, do again. That has been kind of just the best thing that is, as I reflect on the past couple of years, that's just, it's the best right now for me.
How about a favorite book or other resource?
Ooh, okay. I'm ready. It's The Simple Truth About Your Business: Why Focused and Steady Beats Business at the Speed of Light. It's totally obscure. You've probably never heard of it. Alex Brennan Martin, who is from the famous Brennan's family of New Orleans. If you've ever heard of Commander's Palace, that's his family. He has a restaurant in Houston called Brennan's. And he wrote this book back in early, I think 2004. And I just love that at the focus of how he runs his businesses are his people and empowering them to do all the things that they need to do to create a delightful experience for their guests. They treat their guests like family. And if by chance you have an off experience, what this team does to help make it right is out of this world. And I just love what he has to say. So my obscure read.
I love obscure reads. I'll check that one out. Favorite, most impactful piece of advice you've received?
Oh, keep going. Keep going. You know, we're all going to have great days and we're all going to have bad days and we're going to make mistakes and we're going to win and we're going to lose, but keep going.
That's great. Flipping that around, what's a piece of advice you always tell your staff or your clients?
So anyone who's ever worked with me has heard my three rules, and they're a little maybe aggressive. But the first one is don't lie to me. If you lie to me, it's like the mob. I have a black book. I never forget. My mom knows too, and she doesn't forget either. So like I don't do lying. The other thing is, the second one is there's nothing that you can do that we can't fix together. So if you make a mistake, you have no reason to lie. With what I do, I'm not in a profession that is truly life or death. So anything that we're going to do is 100% fixable. As long as you don't, you know, physically injure someone, we're good. And the third is everything is figure outable. We can do whatever we want. Don't be afraid. We can do it. Let's not be our own limiting factor. So there's nothing you can't do.
Great. That's letting that sink in for a second. That's great.
I know. I can't wait to get those out of the notes. Those are great ones.
they're a lot, but they've been effective.
Well, and we saved the last the softball for the last question here. So, if people are still listening to this point, which hopefully they are, you're probably pretty interested. If you're thinking about recruiting, you have some oversight over recruiting. How can people get in touch with you? What do you want to share for people to get connected with you?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, two ways. You can email me at allison@largely.com. That's the best way, or LinkedIn. But I definitely, in my inbox, will get my attention a lot faster than in my LinkedIn inbox, because I will also wade through the franchisee messages. So go ahead and email me directly. That'd be great. Would be happy to connect.
Great. We'll throw those in the show notes. Well, this has been amazing. Really insightful. Got me thinking. I love your rules. And thank you so much for coming on the show. This is great.
Thanks so much for having me. It's been great chatting.
Yeah, you put some really great information and content around all of this, Allison. So we really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you. It's a pleasure.
You got it.
Thanks for joining us. To go deeper or get access to some of the valuable nuggets from today's show, go to bankmarketingshow.com. There you'll find episodes, links to resources, and much more. Be sure to subscribe wherever you find your podcasts, and join us next time.